Lot Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We have and boom. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Drucker.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
This one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
All right, welcome to One Mic on the RC platform. This is your guy, D. Wills. Before I start, I always like to encourage you to go to realsportsguys.com. Check us out or check us out on Apple Podcasts. We got some new ones on there. We got a recent one that I did with Phil T on the Big Show, focusing on the one and done. It was a great podcast. Phil T is next level. You know, that's why we call him the Dr. Dre of the game. And exciting. We got more content coming up there. So either any of the podcast platforms or on realsportsguys.com, you know, check us out. Get there to catch on to what we got in the building. So we want to make sure you do that because we are just excited about what we got going on. We're building a little bit here. You know, as I get into the show, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a couple of my, you know, my compadres with me who are always running with me here on One Mic. I got to bring them in before we get into the open mic session. My man, Hank, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, D. Hope you're doing well, too, yourself as well as Young Darnell. You know, it's another night to sit here and sit back and talk a little bit of sports, and it's always good. Even though the week started off with us being underwater without no power, well, we still move on, and it's time for that hour.
yes. And then we got the youngin'. We got to see if he's doing the right thing. You know, I'm going to push him back to intern status if his audio's all messed up. But we got Darnell. What's up, young man? How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I'm over here in Maryland. I'm College Park, Maryland, as my boy Tyler just said. I'm here for the Javante Check Davis flight on Saturday. You guys know that I'm listening to my boxing podcast. But we're going to have some fun on here today. I just got some buckets, just left the rec center, leaving bodies in my wake, ankles on the floor. Man.
Okay. You sound like you down there on the corners in Baltimore. This ain't The Wire. Tell Poopy I said hi. You sound like you about to run up on Brother Muzan. Up there, you talking all quiet.
I might.
Up in there, but you know, I know we had a tragic loss in the boxing world. I don't know if you want to talk about that. I know it was on the rundown, but you know, where we lost a life here in the ring. So I don't know if you want to share anything about that.
Oh man, it was a very tragic loss in the boxing world. I watched the fight live. And it was crazy because there weren't any knockdowns in the fight. He did take a lot of punishment. The fight was very reminiscent, if you guys haven't seen it, the fight was very reminiscent to Austin Trout versus Jared Hurd. That said, he wasn't really winning the fight like Austin Trout was, but he was boxing on the outside using his lateral movement and stuff. But he just got tired, so he couldn't move around too much more. So we had to stand and fight with the guy that was coming forward. And and the guy who was fighting, Matias, whatever he was, I think that's his name, Matias, from Puerto Rico, his style is very reminiscent to Jerry Hurd. He's like a Jerry Hurd at 140. He just keeps coming forward behind his shoulder, and he's fighting on the inside. He was throwing a lot of hard shots. He wasn't able to drop him, but a lot of damage was done. So Buddy McGirt, he did stop the fight after the 11th round. But I guess the damage was done. And it's very sad news happening because it's a young guy, very young into his career. He's only 13-0. But, man, this is why you hear guys like Floyd Mayweather, guys like Andre Ward talk about the name of the game is to hit and not get hit. You don't want to be just in there taking punishment for no reason just to appease the fans. But guys that fight like that, they get criticized. Guys like Guillermo Rigondeaux, guys like Elizondo Lawler, guys like Floyd Mayweather Jr., guys like that, even Pernell back in the day. Like, even Muhammad Ali, he wouldn't like Muhammad Ali when he was fighting, but guys that use that kind of style, they tend to be ridiculed. And nights like this kind of puts you in a mind, like, maybe I understand the way that they fight. So that's pretty much my take on that. And rest in peace to Devin Chess. And friends go off to his family. And I know Buddy McGirt has to be feeling pretty bad right now. So, heart goes out to him as well.
Thank you for sharing that, man. And, I thought it would be only appropriate for you to talk about that. So, thank you for doing that. And, definitely, and we look forward to, as we move forward in the boxing, I'm sure they're going to be doing the 10 count in honor, at the. Javante Davis fight, we'd love to get the report from you as you have that experience and you continue to forge your future in the boxing. But there probably will be a lot of the talk, as you get in that space for the fight. And so thank you for sharing that, man. And, these are things that we want to do. I mean, he's only 28 years old, young wife, I think a child as well. There's a lot of there's an impact on this, that's a ripple there. So thank you for sharing that.
I'd like to add a little something to that. Tragic, this is such an overall tragedy because let's also remember the fighter that he was fighting against. We talk about, all the time about the injuries that happens in sports and stuff, but you don't ever go up against your opponent and don't think that your opponent is not going to survive the competition. And, I'm thinking back, we had an opportunity to kind of discuss this with some old schoolers. And I don't know if you remember this, and Darnell, this is one for you in the history books. But back in the day, a fighter, Ray Boom Boom Mancini, fought a fighter named Dooku Kim. Dooku Kim was knocked out in that fight. And he actually later passed away. Ray Mancini was never the same fighter again. Okay, no. That just psychologically kind of tore him up. He I don't know if he fought any more after that. You have to sometimes that you never think that your opponent, I don't care how much you put into it, that your opponent's not going to survive the competition. And so, it's an overall tragedy, for the game, and while it is just absolutely devastating on one side with the young man losing his life and his family's got it going without him, but the competition and the way that other fighter, approaches his next fight, if he can, is also something that we don't talk about a lot.
Yeah, you're right, and, you've got fighters were never the same in the ring. They couldn't fight. Some people, it took them a long time to even get back in the ring to spar or do anything. It has an impact on it because people are competitive and they talk a lot before the fight. There is this kind of gentleman's thing where folks want to walk out and be able to walk home healthy to their families. So I think that's something there.
Darnell,
you going to add something?
That, That fight, Dooku Kim versus Ray Mancini, was actually the reason why we fight 12 rounds instead of 15.
That's right.
There was a meeting, and after that, they decided that the fights are going to be 12 rounds instead of 15, as far as the 10 fights go. But like you said about the having such a tragic thing happening like that must weigh on somebody's conscience, especially in a sport like boxing where the game is to hit and inflict damage on your opponent. Like, I remember this is going even farther back in history, but you have a guy named Sugar Ray Robinson. He had a dream one day that he was going to kill his opponent, in the ring, and he didn't want to go through with the fight. And he went to a priest, and the priest said, it is just a dream. And he ended up coming true. And his opponent, Jimmy Doyle, who didn't make it out of the fight next time. So I know that was really wear on somebody.
Yeah, it is. And the impact it has on the family around him and everything else. And so, Maxim is going to be our thought players here, Real Sports Guys. And his family and friends and extended, as well as Buddy McGirt, who did everything he could to try to keep it from happening. So, yeah, we definitely went. That was something that was on top of my mind. We didn't have it in the rundown. I'm glad we were able to touch on to that. You listen to RSG One Mic. We're about to go into the open mic, and there was a unusual press conference.
Say hello at the Clippers, Paul and Kawhi. Come on! Come on! Come on! Get up! Come on, get up! The viewers, psyched as I am! Get up!
That is owner and fellow Michigander. I got a couple of Michiganders going on here. Steve Ballmer. Excited about the introduction of PG and his man Kawhi Leonard. I've never seen an owner. Is anybody more happier than Steve Ballmer? Like, I don't know if y'all had a chance to look at that press conference, but I'll start with you, Hank. Like this is a billionaire, like over many, many times, and he was jumping around like he won $1 billion. Like, is there anyone more happier than him? I've never seen a player like that. And what did you think was going through Kawhi and PG's mind?
I know it was like, what in the hell did we just sign up for? But you know what? What we don't sometimes pay a close attention to is, he might be the breath of fresh air as the owner for the Clippers that Mark Cuban once was for the Dallas Mavericks. Mark Cuban was, if nothing else, a fan of the team that he owned. Okay, so if this owner is that way, he took over for Sterling. I think he bought the team from Sterling, and we all know about Sterling. So this we've seen this before. Probably not at this level, but he is in La La Land. Okay, he did win the free agency sweepstakes. Okay, with the Claw. All right, that was he was most sought after. And he pulled off one of the biggest coups to get him there to the Clippers and not the Lakers. So that's a lot to be excited for from him. And then, he showed that he's got some ham in him. He's got some pork in him because, he took that and he embellished it. And it's his job. It's his investment, to get the Clipper fans excited about what they have. Okay, so I don't blame him. It was theater. We're talking about it. Mark Cuban was the first one to kind of do a lot of that crazy stuff as an owner in the NBA. But see, I'm not surprised. But yeah, I how Kawhi is anyway. I saw the way they were side eyeing the daylight out the man, but they was like, hey, we getting paid, so we ain't gonna worry about it.
And before I go to Darnell, if you're going to take over a franchise of Lakers or get your more or your market share in LA, you gotta have somebody like him. Like, he has no fear. He going to get the new arena. He going to create the brand. You're going to see stars walk over there. People like to be around people with positive energy like that. He going to make sure they get the best of the best. If you look at their organizational structure, it's probably from top to bottom, one of the best in the league in terms of people he got placed. He's trying to let them know we're trying to go after everything and be enthusiastic. And, you know, he's used to pushing boundaries and doing the impossible. So when people say it can't be a Laker, a Clipper town, he don't believe it. And it is reality. And he want to make sure everybody, like, we got the energy. And that's what this was part of it. So, you know, he's up for the test to say, look, we're more than a sideshow here in L.A. Darnell, you get a chance to check that out?
I did. And have you ever seen such a large difference in personalities that from Steve Ballmer and Kawhi Leonard? It's like night and day. And you see that the failed handshake? Steve Ballmer tried to shake his hand, and Kawhi looked at him and put both his hands on his shoulders. I was like, what is going on? That was a classic Kawhi moment. But
you hit it right on the head. I mean, and some of that's like Kawhi, you got to step up. Some of that's Kawhi's responsibility. Shake his hand, man. All this awkward exchanges on handshakes, you got to be better. So some of that's on Kawhi. Like, everybody keeps putting it on the other person. Some of that stuff, Kawhi, you got to – we give you a pass on everything else. We ain't giving you no more pass on the handshake. Get the handshake right, man. You know, this is a guy who writing the check. At least give him a hug. You know, there's certain things you got to evolve to if you want to sit in that lead seat, that lead dog seat. So when I looked at that, I'm like, that ain't Ballmer. Like, you want your owner to be that happy to be here. Give him a hug. Give him something. So I put that mess up on that on Kawhi. He needs more criticism on it. We can't criticize him a lot, but on that one, I'm criticizing him. So did you see the look of Doc? Hey, Darnell, did you see Doc Rivers? I was trying to figure out what Doc Rivers was thinking. That's the part I was trying to think. Doc was smiling, but Doc always looked like it was kind of corny, but Doc going to roll with it. I was trying to figure out what Doc was thinking. Doc was like, I'm going to smooth this over. You know, I don't know what Doc was thinking. Did you see the look on Doc's face?
I didn't. I just saw a couple clips of it. I didn't see the whole press conference, so I can't really respond to that one. My bad.
No, you know, the thing is about it, though, he threw them all off with that, okay? I mean, he just escalated. And then he was like, get up. It's like, dude, it's a press conference. Okay, the season is over. You know, I mean, I know you're excited, but calm down, my God. But, you know, he was up there probably in the owner's box before they got there, had him a few tulips, so he was ready to go.
Oh, man, I think this is going to be an interesting NBA season. And I'm excited to see it gone. And Ballmer's got me. I mean, NBA's just owned this summer. If you're talking about anybody, they've hit out the park this summer with everything they got going on. It's like it's almost like they can't do anything wrong. Except there's one person who might be able to get over them to do it. Jalen Ramsey rolled up in a Brinks truck. That to me, you know, we always have these, you know, coming to training camp. Somebody's always doing something. You know, you have people riding up in their crazy cars or their, you know, the Packers got the bikes with the kids and all this. But Jalen been talking about his money, and he wanted to make a statement by driving up with a Brinks truck. I think it was a lost art of just tongue-in-cheek. Did y'all get a chance to see that? Hank, did you get a chance to see that story on Jalen Ramsey?
I did, but it, you know what? It's so funny to me. You know, the depth that these guys are going to go to. So I'm going to drive up in a brief stuff. Now, see, I always take the other, I could take the management side, okay? It's like, okay,
yeah.
So you're going to drive up into camp with a Brinks truck. Well, hell, if you can afford to rent a Brinks truck, we must be paying you pretty damn good. So get your butt out there and run them cones. But I get where you're coming from. You know, I get where they're coming from. You know, that CBA they got is raggedy in the NFL. So these guys got trying to get paid. So I ain't mad at him. But, you know, sometimes some of those antics just backfire. You got to be careful because those owners be like, well, you know, he was able to get his Brinks truck. So clearly he's overpaid. You know, they come up with some crazy stuff like that. He needs more incentives for this season to get the money he's looking for.
Yeah. It was. I mean, I love him, man. He's good for football. It's like you said. Like these football players are trying to find anyway. They look at these basketball players. They, you know, like the cat. You know, we was young and kids didn't have no, the ice cream man came, and there's always a couple folks that had no money, and you got your ice cream, and you were looking. They were looking at that ice cream, like it was the antidote. Like they needed it. Like you look up, you look in your ice cream, and they looking at you like you crazy, and you ain't got no money to give them nothing. That's how football players are looking at basketball players now. They look over the fence,
right.
Like y'all got all them cones, y'all get to eat like that, and they gonna do whatever they can to get a lick of that ice cream. I want to be able to shop there, so I don't blame them. I don't blame these cats for doing what they're doing, and we'll cover a lot of that part as we start to think about the NFL preseason because those layers around that. Will shape a lot of our conversations around some of this NFL preview. Over the next few weeks, we're going to try and preview all the divisions. We're only going to start one division today because we're going to try and work out the kinks of our methodology, the way we're getting at this. And so today, the lucky division in the cipher today is in the NFC East. And so we got some questions we're trying to each answer in terms of figuring that out as we get in the cipher. You listen to RSG One Mic. We just left out the open mic, and we're about to enter the cipher.
Call the cipher.
All right, this is the cipher. This is where we get our main topic, and our topic today in the cipher is the NFC East. And I'm gonna kind of frame what the start with. Just kind of high-level preview of each of the teams in terms of where they are in the power rankings here in the preseason. Just maybe a couple of just items about not get too deep in them because we'll get into deeper enough analysis as we go around with each person. But, you know, obviously there's power rankings out, and the highest-ranked team in the NFC East is Philadelphia. They're 10th in the preseason power rankings. You know, a lot of what they got going on is whether or not they can improve on their running game. They were, I believe, 28th in the league last year in rushing, and so having a balanced offense. And you don't have the backup. It's about whether or not Carson Wentz can stay healthy and carry a team through an entire season. It's funny that, you know, people co-sign on Carson Wentz, you know, a lot like they do for my man over there in Indianapolis. It's like he gets even though he's had some great seasons, but he ain't finished. But, you know, they will rank him over a lot of other players and without some of the same criticism. But this is the season. He don't have a safety net. The team don't have a safety net. He's the one that's got to carry him. But they're ranked 10th. Dallas Cowboys, you know who else was driving that Brink truck up. But they say he went on the plane. It's Zeke Elliott. Now, he got a whole bunch of other issues. I'm sure we're going to hear Hank talk about that when he talks about Dallas and everything else that Dallas was. Dallas is ranked 19th in their power rankings. Philadelphia is projected on average for people looking at to have around 9 wins. Dallas is projected to have about 8 wins looking at that. And people are thinking that Philly has about a 66.5% chance of making the playoffs. Dallas has about a 44.2% make playoffs. But, you know, Dallas's biggest thing was, you know, they had a good defense, but really solidifying that defensive front. Making sure that they're healthy and doing stuff on defense because they're going to need that defense to really show up early. And then whether or not, you know, Zeke Elliott is going to be there to really lead that running game. And, you know, are they going to take care of Dak Prescott? There's some stories around that. Like, where is the stability, the long con, and how are those things going to affect the way in which they get into their season? So, but they are a 19th. Washington is 28th in the power rankings, projected to have about 6 wins for the year. They got like a 10% chance preseason of making the playoffs. You know, Washington's an interesting thing. I love the they had Josh is over there jumping the bull and everything else over there. I think in Italy and Gruden up there saying, you knew the bull wasn't going to hit him because Josh avoids hits. So you know that felt like the line that they said with KD at the celebration. It's kind of a funny line, but then he realized he might have made a mistake. But Gruden has been getting the pass, so he's on the hot seat. And what is he going to do with that quarterback situation? Is he going to go with the youngin? A lot of those decisions are going to be key for them in terms of, and it's about time. You know, he's been getting the pass for a long time, and maybe it's the Gruden name, but he got to figure out how to produce in a division where there's some wins to be had. And then we had the Giants, who are projected at 30th in the preseason power rankings, projected to have about 6.3 wins, and they're also a 10% chance of making the playoffs. This is about Eli Manning. They've told you there is no quarterback controversy. There is nothing there. It's all Eli. But is it really Saquon? Is this win we have for the Giants kind of where Denver was? When they won the playoffs late in Elway's career, where they started to succeed because they made it about the running back. And Saquon catching the ball in the backfield, Saquon getting the touches, maybe shortening the game, figuring out how to score, eliminating the turnovers. But they say it's going to be about Eli. And so where would they go? But they're ranked 30th in division. So this is kind of where – this is a division – that if you look at the averages in terms of power rankings here in the preseason, you know, the only team that's really getting, like, serious noise is Philadelphia. With Dallas is kind of that group that's kind of that next tier. But this is a division that people, I believe, if you look at it, have a lot of questions about them. So part of what we're going to try and do when we go through with each team is we're going to try and understand in each of these divisions, you know, who's the most important player in the division based on what they mean to their team? Another question we're going to be asking is, who do we think is going to have a breakout season this year coming out of division? Who's that player that's ready to go to that next level? And then based on some of the things I just said earlier, which team will underperform expectations and which team will overperform expectations? And then each of us will hit down to what our final standings are. And who will make the playoffs? Because we might have final standings, and we might say this team is going to win the division, but we might believe that division is so strong that they might have two or three teams who still might make the playoffs, right? And we want to get a sense of that, contextualize what we think it is about those divisions. So that's kind of how we're going to try to flow through this a little bit. We're going to kind of go round robin. I'm going to hit Hank, and he'll answer his question. We'll have a little discussion about, you know, who we put out on the table and everything else, and kind of let it flow. So that's how we flow on everybody. Y'all get on the ride with us, and here we go. So we're going to start with the first question. I'm going to go to Darnell. I know you're in Baltimore, and I hope you don't get hit by a left hook. But we're going to start with who you believe in the NFC East is the most important player to his team in the division.
Man, this is a real tough one because in the game of football, you got 22 men on the field at the same time, so – it's hard to really say the one guy that is the most important. But if I have to choose one, I'd have to go with the guy we talked about a little bit earlier, Mr. Ezekiel Elliott. He's holding out right now, and I usually take the player side on this kind of thing, but I think he should probably just show up. But Ezekiel Elliott, in my opinion, he is the guy that is most important to his team, because the running game is a large part of what Dallas does as a team. And when he gets that running game going, and he's a bell cow, he's one of those guys, he gets stronger as the game goes on. So when he really gets going, that opens up a lot of room for Amari Cooper to do his thing and the rest of the receivers to play off of that. And the quarterback can get in the rhythm because he's not necessarily playing behind the six, because they're going to be ahead. You're going to be more third and two, you know what I'm saying? You get some second and four, good down and distance. But I would say it's Ezekiel Elliott for this one.
And, you know, and I think that's a good thought. I mean, Zeke is obviously obvious, you know, very important because, just like you say, he's a straw that stirs the drink in a way. But one of the things that's interesting about that is given that, you know, they're strengthening their receiving core, they're getting Jason Witten back a little bit as a security blanket, even though he's 37 years old, do you think they have enough weapons to even believe that they could still be successful without him if they have the growth on defense and things that if he holds out two or three games, right? Do you see a maturity in, you know, they got a number one receiver, you know, do you see some things where they might have a maturity in a way that Zeke might not, you know, they're getting their line back, which a lot of their success is having the best line. Do you see them being able, see the maturity in other places?
I would say the defense is really good. You have a very good up and coming defense. The offensive line has always been strong for the last 5 or 6 years. But when you're saying like the weapons as far as the receiver and stuff going, I don't know if I necessarily want to put Dak Prescott as the guy to carry the offense. I don't know if I want him throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game. He's better when he can run out, he can play out play action, you know, when he has the run support behind him. So I don't know. I see what you're saying. I agree. They do have some good weapons. They do have a very good defense. But like I said earlier, it's hard to pick somebody.
I think you made a really good case for why he is, and I mean, I think if you could probably get 9 out of 10 players, nine out of 10 media types, his name might come up. His name probably would come up 7 times at least. So I think you made a really good case for them. Hank, who do you see?
In the division or for the Cowboys?
For the division.
No, I'm going a little bit different. I'm going to say Carson Wentz. Because, look, to me, it seems like Philadelphia now made it to the Super Bowl, okay? Nick Foles won the Super Bowl for them, okay? Carson Wentz has not proven that he can stay the whole season. Carson Wentz is not – but the Philadelphia Eagles have now, put all their eggs into the Carson Wentz basket, okay? Clayton Thorson is your backup, okay, out of Northwestern from what I know right now. My point is that – while you can make an argument for Ezekiel Elliott, you can make an argument for Dak Prescott, but Ezekiel Elliott did sit out 6 games for that team. They were able to run the football to some degree. Okay, he does have a little bit better weapons, and Dallas just has a solid defense. Okay, and they've got, in my opinion, probably one of the weaker divisions out of all of them, because when you look at Washington and you look at the Giants, those are basically rebuild projects, if you ask me, in my opinion. But when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, okay, a team that's a couple of years removed from the Super Bowl championship, all right, and went back and was one bad catch by the wide receiver of possibly knocking off New Orleans last year in the playoffs. Okay, this team is very well coached. They play a solid defense, and they can score the football. Okay, provided that the quarterback stays healthy. Now, and this is the thing. The Eagles was rolling before Wentz got hurt, and he got hurt again. Okay, he has to be the most important player to that team because there's nobody behind him now. They got rid of all the quarterbacks that could help this team to get there, and they're very well coached and very solid. So it's got to be him because it's like if he goes, I don't know where the Eagles are going to be. I think their ranking, everything just plummets.
And, I mean, I also had Carson Wentz for a number of things that you said, and I think the one thing I might add into it, and Darnell and I have been going back and text messaging a lot on this, so I know when we start talking about the AFC North, we're going to get into a whole other conversation. But part of why also, self-admittedly, as a young quarterback, one of the things, he was a good leader.
Right.
And I think that's part of what made Foles not only likable in the locker room in his play, but he demonstrated a really good leadership in there, and that's the place he's got to work. So availability, questionable leadership, where the guys follow you, right? Has it been demonstrated over time that they're going to follow you in ways that you can get out where there is no safety net, right? And I think, and there's a lot of pressure. You got DeSean Jackson back, a lot of pieces, so there can't be any excuse. You got a little older offensive line with some of the players there with a couple older players. Defense has got to really solidify for them to put it all together. So I think that they are heavy on Carson, right? I just talked about the fact they had no running game, right? And they've tried to up that a little bit, but it's not only having a no running game, but, you know, are they the second coming, you know, of kind of the previous regime of Eagle coaches where they could have runners, but they just refuse to run. They get pass happy with Carson. And will he,
you know,
people talk a lot about, you know, some of the other running quarterbacks, but his biggest issue when I get hurt is because he's running all the time. So people, they'll be critical about Cam Newton, some of these other guys who run, but is he willing to stay in the pocket and not put himself in harm's way in the same way people say about Cam and some of these other running quarterbacks? And so those kind of decision-making things, given that you can't afford to be hurt, you got to be available if they're going to win. I think those are some question marks. And if he's down, you said if he's down, they have no one else to go to. That is
nobody.
That's the level of Nick, you know, that they
and
had confidence in.
And keep in mind, they have some talent in their in that running back, you know, room. They got some talent in there. They drafted Miles Sanders out of Penn State. You know, they got Donnell Pumphrey. They already have the veteran Darren Sproles. They've got some talent over there. Okay. So
they got Jordan Howard. Yeah.
Jordan Howard. Yeah, Jordan Howard, thank you. And so they've got some talent in that running back room. They just need to, you know, commit to that a little bit and keep him in the pocket and let him do what he do. And, you know, and again, coming off an ACL injury, you know, he needs to really just cool it.
But the question is, are they gonna pull Andy Reid? Right? Had the running game, but refused to run.
Right.
It's one thing to have these guys in the room, but are you going to run the football? Right? And so
another
thing.
And you also got a guard
that
offensive line.
Yes. They got it, but are they going to stay healthy? Right? Left tackle got to stay on the field. 37 years old.
Yep.
Right?
Well, they drafted a good left tackle to back them up, too.
Yeah, but drafting somebody to back them up and then somebody actually being a play when the lights come on is a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
And that's a delicate.
And they also got the
delicate
best defender in the game.
Yeah, but if your quarterback don't stay in the pocket and run, it don't matter what you do on the line, right?
Right.
Like it's hard to block for people like Cam and them. Like, because you're setting up it's easy to block for Brady because you know where he's going to be. And he ain't going nowhere. He'll give you one step. Brady missed two steps. I'm going to give you two steps left. I'm going to give you two steps right. If you block it for him, you know he gonna be there. You can set the pocket and go. Some of the sacks come from some of these running quarterbacks come back not on not having a good line. They escape quickly and allow themselves to be exposed, and so you don't value the strength of that line. And that's the part where he has to control when he's gonna run and when he isn't. I think that's gonna be a very important part of it to allow that line to be as great as it can be, right? I think Dak does a really good job of that. Like, he has design runs. He got a good feel for it. He lets them be there. There's some other things he needs to work on. But I think he does a much better of being in that space and being comfortable in that space with that line. He just got to complete the play. Whereas Carson, I think he's a great pass. He had great numbers. But he'll tuck and run in ways that is going to jeopardize him. So we got to see if it's all going to come together. But if he gets hurt, that's why I say he's the most important for them.
Right.
Because I think if Zeke doesn't play – I think, and I agree with everything that Darnell said. I mean, Zeke is there. But I think the Cowboys have started to try to become more Zeke-proof. I think they still can be competitive. If Carson ain't playing, Eagles done. Like,
they're done.
Because he's such a different
to be Carson-proof. They won the Super Bowl without Carson.
With a great backup quarterback who was special. Not all backup quarterbacks are like that. Right, like there have been history. Frank Reich, there's some great guys who are great backup quarterbacks. Like, we should do that one time. Like, Like, they can never start, but when they came in the game, nobody else wanted to see them. Like,
right.
We have those guys, those great backups. Like, in the backup role, they sometimes put up big numbers. When they started on a regular basis, they weren't good. But in that backup role, Nick Foles was that guy. He was just comfortable. He knew the system. You know, there were and the coaches knew him well enough because they had him previously. They knew how to game plan for him. So I think there are a lot of factors that allow that to happen that I don't think exist right now for them.
Right.
I think what they clearly said, and this was designed, and I give them the credit. Carson, it's time to stand up. It's time for you to have all the weight on your shoulders if you're going to be that guy. And we got to see if you're that guy. We're taking away all the training wheels. I mean, you got to figure out how to be here for us to win. So it's going to be interesting, but I think we raised a lot of issues. Let's move to question two. Y'all warmed up. I love this. Y'all own this. I threw these questions out to these brothers, and they ready to go like no other brother like that. All right, player who will have a breakout season this year. I'm gonna go with you, Hank. Who do you think will have a breakout season in the North?
You got to go with Amari Cooper. You got to go with Amari Cooper. And the reason why you got to go with Amari Cooper is because they went and they traded him. They got him over here to Dallas. All right. He. You know, I was just watching on the NFL. You know, he was like in the between the 60th and 70th. You know, in that percentile of best players last year. That's because he couldn't catch the ball. You know, with all that talent that he has. So now he's going to be with the Dallas Cowboys. He's got to be an impactful player to open up that running game for the Cowboys. I think that he and Dak Prescott, that could really be something to see. So I look for him to have a breakout season, possibly even a Pro Bowl season, because he's a weapon. He's a weapon, and we saw a little bit of that last year. But, you know, if you take the year as a whole, you know, he started off with the Raiders. He wasn't getting it done. That's what made him trade bait. But I think right down there in Big D, I think he's going to really, really, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
All right. There we go. Darnell, who you think will have a breakout season in the NFC East?
I like Hank's pick with Amari Cooper. He's one of he's a very talented player. But I think he broke out last year after the trade because he proved when he was in that when he was able to play with Dak Prescott, play with a team that gives the quarterback a team like the Cowboys that have a good line that can give the quarterback time and time for his route to develop. Amari Cooper played excellent. So my breakout player is going to be Darius Geis for the Washington Redskins. He's a very talented running back. He's big, super athletic, really fast. He's going to get a lot of touches because they have a rookie quarterback. Because Alex Smith, I'm not sure if he's – I don't think he's ready to play yet. So between Darius Geis and Adrian Peterson, and he has a veteran in Adrian Peterson that knows the game, that he's going to be able to teach him a lot. He probably taught him a lot last year when Geis was injured and sitting out. But I think Geis is going to bounce back and have a breakout season with the Washington Redskins.
All right. Oh, those are two great ones. I like the Geis one. I'm going on defense on this one. And, you know, when they picked him, and I had a chance to, like, watch him and kind of remember him playing in college and just how excited he was to be drafted, Leighton Vander Esch. He had 135 tackles as a rookie, 7 pass defended, and 2 interceptions. He just he was ranked. You know how they do the 100 top 100 NFL players, the peers and everybody. They ranked him 74th. This is like one thing I can say about the Cowboys. You know, I'm a Steelers fan. Everything I time for the Cowboys, whatever. But you know, outside of some of these other picks they made, around their line, these linebackers, stuff like this. This is a pick. When they made it out of Boise State, I was like, this kid has got something. And I just think he's going to, you know, when Lee is sometimes vulnerable in terms of injury, but with Smith and with him, that linebacking core they got is going to be incredible. But I think he's so versatile. I think he's I think he played a lot on instinct last year. I think now having a year of just being comfortable in the defense, being able to get after the football, I think that this guy, I think their defense is going to really carry them. And I think this guy is going to really go, he's got a motor, he's going to be making a lot of tackles. So he's someone that I think you need to be watching, and, you know, I think he might mess around, you know, in his second year, get to the Pro Bowl. So great thoughts, guys. So a team that will underperform expectations. Now, let me go back and say, okay, they did the power rankings. They kind of gave what they based on average and whatever, where they thought teams were going to finish in terms of the number of wins. Eagles, 9.4 wins, so, you know, close to 10-win season, 9-win season. Cowboys, about an 8-win season, which I think would be disappointing for them, but people are projecting an 8-win season. The Washington, 6 wins, and then the Giants, 6 wins. So, Darnell, who do you think will outperform expectations here in the preseason? Or underperform. Yeah,
okay, so I'm going to have to go with the favorite, the Philadelphia Eagles. They are going to be – I believe if everything plays right, the Philadelphia Eagles should be in a great position to have a great season. But I hate to be the Mr. Negative. I hate to be a guy that is bringing the bad news. But it's hard for me to bet on an injury-prone quarterback in a game like football, which is, it's a very dangerous game. Things happen, especially in guys that like Carson Wentz that like to run, like you said earlier. So, man, it's hard for me to bet on them. So, if I had to pick a team that was going to underperform, because obviously the Giants is have the possibility of being the worst team in the NFL. You have the Redskins, which I'm going to mention later on. And you have the Cowboys, which I believe the Cowboys are going to have a good season. So, process of elimination, I'm going with the Eagles because of their injury-prone quarterback.
All right. Good stuff, man. Way to break that down. Who do you got, Hank?
Actually, I'm going with the Redskins because I think they're going to have a quarterback controversy. Okay? I just don't see how you drafted Dwayne Haskins and he don't play, okay, as a rookie. That being said, I think that you're looking at the Eagles, you're looking at the Cowboys, you're looking at the Redskins having to play those two teams twice. I don't think they beat them either time. That's 4 losses right there. And then, you know, I'm just concerned that, you know, you've got a player that this happens a lot of times when you got teams that are picked to make the playoffs. And they've got them a stud over there as a young quarterback, and the fans want to see him play. Okay, and that automatically, from what we've seen, that has always, you know, created some sort of dissension in the locker rooms. So even though this team was picked to win 6 games, I could see them only winning 5. Okay, because I can just see that any sort of slow start by the Redskins, you know, is going to really ramp up getting Dwayne Haskins in the game. And Dwayne Haskins, while very, very talented, is still a rookie. Okay, so for that reason alone, I think for the reason that Darnell picked, because he's concerned that Carson Wentz might get hurt, I think the quarterback controversy that's going to happen in D.C. could fracture this team, and they could go 5-11.
Wow. So, this is good stuff here. So, yeah, I got the Eagles. And part of it is just what you said about Carson, but, like, their first 5 games against playoff teams, they got to play the Seahawks, the Patriots, the Bears, Cowboys twice, they got a schedule, man. And then they got to play, I think, a Thursday night at Lambeau. I think there's too many potholes. And they're playing in these first 5 games, they're playing against teams with the Patriots defense at the end of the season was on up. It was up there, right? The Seahawks are bouncing back. You saw that video. I love that video you sent me Darnell, what, you know, Russ is doing with his teammates and stuff like that. Like, it's a rejuvenation going on with them. I want to sleep on. And the Bears aren't playing. They straight defensively, they're going to put people. And then the Cowboys defense is going to be great. So you're talking about defenses that are going to put a hit on you. It's going to be interesting. If stuff starts cracking a little bit and Jaws might start being on the line, it's going to be interesting to see how this is. You know, you got $128 million, Carson. That's pressure, baby. In Philly? We ain't even talking. The Philly fans are going to be off the hook. So I for some reason, I mean, they either going to be 12 wins, you know what I'm saying? They either going to be 12 wins or they going to be in that 7-win, 8-win, trying to make the wild card because just something didn't bounce their way. Even with the talent they got with Deshaun and all these guys coming back, there might be a struggle there and why I might be, you know, having the standings a little bit different than it is. So, great, hey, guys, great analysis on that.
I got to say something, hey, though. I want to put you guys to task, okay? Because what I'm hearing is that there is a hesitancy to whether Carson Wentz can stay healthy. And this is why we're saying this. Because don't forget that before this young man blew out his knee, that the Eagles that year that they won the Super Bowl had only lost two football games with Carson Wentz at the helm. They were blowing teams' doors off. Okay, they had one of the most, prolific offenses. So if they figured it out, and last year he was coming off of that devastating injury, so he wasn't going to be 100%. So what I'm saying to you is that be careful of that because he's bound to be healthy. He's had that injury that he wasn't 100% all last year. If he's 100%, he is one damn good quarterback. Just go back and look at his numbers before the injury, okay? And take last year as still a recovery time, okay? So because if we're looking for him to have another devastating injury, then you're absolutely right. But if not, that is a very formidable team, the Eagles.
But they also had his quarterback coach was a quarterback who's now gone. His offensive coordinator was a quarterback who now gone. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was also having a coaching trio. And he also benefited from the one-time through rule. Like, we got a chance to see you one time through. You shocked us. Y'all had a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And then you got hurt before we could scout you and go back and get you again. We got film, right? And so, you know, some of that success was not just Carson, but you had some other people playing well. You had the defense playing well. And he got the benefit of people trying to figure out the offensive philosophy of those coaches. And he got really set up with a quarterback coach who was a quarterback, right, who's gone. Offensive coordinator who was a quarterback, gone. And then a head coach who did quarterback, right? So who got that perspective? And so I think there's a lot of pieces that allowed for him to be successful in ways that if Dak Prescott had the same setup, I think he would have been successful, right? So I'm not saying he's not a great quarterback, but I also you only got a chance to see him through that one run. He got hurt. Then you really didn't get a chance. So there's some other things where people got tape on him now, right?
Right.
And so how is that going to play out? And, again, sometimes it's not about you being great or bad. Sometimes it's the roll of the dice of who you playing. And if you open it up playing against the Patriots and you got to play Chicago, as well as the Cowboys defense wasn't bad, I don't care how good you are. They're going to give everybody a hard time, right, those defenses. So some of that may not be about Carson being bad. It's the fact that as y'all are trying to break in some of these new players into your offense, y'all are going against top 7 defenses.
Now, this is the same Chicago team they beat in the playoffs last year, right?
Yeah, but it's going to be Chicago team.
All I'm saying is, I'm not trying to be a Philly fan, but Philly has held their own.
Yes, you are, man. Yes, you are.
They held their own.
Who are you going to – you can't be rooting for the Lions, and we'll talk about them next week.
We ain't got to talk about them. I'm having fun talking about football. Let's keep it fun. You talk about Lions, and I can go to therapy. I'm not trying to do that. I'm saying, though, is that you got a very formidable Philadelphia team. This team is 2 years removed from the Super Bowl championship. Okay, and they're playing these other teams. So all I'm saying is,
would it be a shock if they lost to the Bears early in the season?
It wouldn't be a shock. But I wouldn't, but I'm just saying that this team has got it's battle tested. You got a battle tested team that's 2 years removed from the championship in the Eagles. Don't just write them off that way, is what I'm saying.
There's a whole bunch of teams 2 years removed from a run. That's football. Right? You could have done something 2 years ago. It's a whole different thing right now.
Okay, but even last year, okay, but even if you go to last year, this was a formidable playoff team that went further than anybody else in their division. So, is what I'm saying to you. So, while I'm saying this, I understand where y'all are coming from, but I'm taking you to task on it because this ain't no slouch of a team, this Eagle team.
But I'm saying this: if they could win the division and make the playoffs with 9 wins. Or 7-8
yeah.
wins, right?
Yeah.
In that division.
Right, that's the big point. It's about expectations.
Yeah. You know, they still could be doing it. It's just in that division, whereas if they were in another division, they'd be in trouble. So that's part of it that they're going to have. This is a great discussion. And we holding this here, so we got it on tape, so we want to bring it back so that – you know, we'll be sitting up there like Mueller, you know, replaying the testimony. So we'll get chances. It's all on wax. It's all on wax. And I'll be like, I can't, is it on the tape? You just got to go by what's on the tape. I have nothing else to say. I'll be just like Mueller.
That's right. I stand by my report.
I stand by my statement. And I stand by the transcript of the show. That's what I said.
That's right.
That's what I said. All right, youngin. Who's gonna overperform expectations, Darnell?
Well, my answer to this question actually depends on one thing. I have a question for you. What amount of wins did you say that the Dallas Cowboys were supposed to get next year?
They had them at 8 wins, 8.4. So since it's under 5 in mathematics, I'm going to round it down to 8. Which I thought was kind of low for what people are saying. I thought they'd be a 9-win projection.
That's what I'm saying. They bugging. So I'm going to have to go with Dallas.
So let's use our RSG factor piece to add on. We'll say for them 9 wins just like the Eagles. I think that's how they look at it. So let's say our projection is 9 wins.
Okay. So I'm going to go with Washington because Washington Redskins, they were a team that I slept on last year. I had Game Pass last year, so I did all the NFL games, and I just watch them whenever I get a chance. So I was pretty much running to games where I was watching the game specifically to watch the other team, and Washington would just pop off the screen. Like, their defense played extremely well last year. They seem like they're going to make an Alabama team on the NFL because it seems like their whole defense was Alabama. It's ridiculous. But their defense played very well. Adrian Peterson, he had a very good season last year, especially for being like an older running back like he is. And now he's going to have support with various guys coming back from injury. You got another quarterback coming in because, you know, Alex Smith got hurt last year. So, we're bringing in Dwayne Haskins, and the only drawback for me is they only played at 6 wins. I expect them to exceed that. Either go 7-9, 8-8. I can see that. So they're gonna be my team. But the only thing I didn't like about them is I really don't like that they let go of DJ Swearinger. I know this happened last year, but. I thought he was pretty good. He was really good for their team. I don't remember why he got let go, but it would have been nice seeing him on this team. So I'm going Washington, but if Dallas is being slated at 8-8, they're definitely going to overachieve that. And I'll do that.
Yeah. So I don't know why I did this. So I'm gonna regret it. But there's something that tells me. This is going to be true. And I'm going to get blasted right here, but that's okay. I'm going to take it.
I don't know why I feel this.
And I don't have a lot of evidence for this. So I'm going to take this blast on y'all. I don't have a lot of evidence, but there's a feeling. Because it's so negative, it can't be true. Y'all are like, oh, I think the Giants are going to outperform, man. I think the Giants are a weird organization. When you throw dirt on them, they mess around and get 10 wins, and you don't know how they did it. And they the laughing stock, people mocking the GM. They own the coach. They trying to ride Eli out of town. But the one thing I saw, I was watching the ESPYs, and I said, boy, Saquon looked good. Saquon Barkley looked good. Saquon looked like he ready for an MVP run. You could a running back like Saquon can make a lot of cats look good if you're going to run through him. Like, it was almost like watching 24/7 of Floyd Mayweather and having everybody focus on everything he's saying rather than turn off the volume and watching how he's preparing. And if you watch how he's preparing and don't listen to everything he's saying, you're like, dang, he's working hard. He's on another level in his preparation. So I think the Cowboys – now, this is where I disagree. Because I kind of took this looking at ESPN's power rankings. I think most people are projecting the Giants to have like 4 or 5 wins, not 6. In my mind, I think most people are projecting them to have 4 or 5 wins. I think they're going to have 7, 8 wins. They might have 7 wins, which if you talk to people about whether they're getting 7 wins right now, people are like, you know, way in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that means I think they might have 7, 8 wins. I think they're going to outperform. But I think most people, if you look at most people across a lot of projections, even I looked at, a lot of people are looking at Giants having like 5 wins, 4 wins. So this 6, is, I think it's kind of high. But I think the Giants might be in that 7, maybe 8 win space. And like I said, I could break down and give you a lot of reasons why. I think their offensive line is going to play better. I think they're going to play much more through Saquon. I think Eli is going to benefit from the play action act. So I think their offensive scheme is going to be much better and delivered not only on Eli's shoulders so that he can make plays when he needs to. And I think their defense, although got some young spots in their defense, I think their defense will play at a higher level than expected. And they'll pull some things together there defensively. I just think, for some reason, I just think that they're gonna play above people's expectations. I know I'm gonna get blasted for it, but hey, it's on whack.
I'm looking at their schedule. I can't see.
That might be that crazy.
No, I can't see. I'm looking at their schedule right now, and clearly they're gonna beat the Lions. We know that, but I see 5 wins for them. Okay, maybe 6. So I don't. I mean, because they've got a pretty stunt schedule. Okay, so that's that. Now, take the nothing away from you. The fact that Saquon Barkley is a beast, and you got you a veteran quarterback in Eli Manning. Okay, what did that trade with Cleveland give them? Okay, now you got my boy Jabril Peppers over there in their backfield. But what I mean, it's in the defensive backfield. Giants, by and large, usually play pretty decent defense as traditionally, but. You know, the wide receiver just broke his thumb. He's going to be out for a little bit. I don't know where they're going to get the 6 win from, but I know what you're saying. I mean, but I'm not going to kill you on it. I just don't know who they're going to upset.
I just think Saquon is just going to be so dominant. It might catch up to him later in the season. He's just going to be so dominant. Like, he figured out the code. And you know he's capable of doing it. You know he's capable of being that type of player. And I think he's going to figure out the code, which is going to open up Eli's game, right? But they got to play through him. I think they're going to play through him. Go ahead.
You know, if the offensive line can perform like you say they're going to perform and they're going to improve, I can see what you're saying happening because I really like what they did with their defense this year. They overhauled the secondary. They brought back Janoris Jenkins. But they also brought in DeAndre Baker, a cornerback I really like out of Georgia. They also brought in Julian Love. He's the guy who can play in the slot. So he's going to fit very nicely in there from Notre Dame. So you brought in Jabril Peppers, like I said earlier, at the safety spot. Antoine Bethea is an older guy, but he knows the game. He has a good IQ. So their secondary is going to be really good. And, you know, the NFL, these days, they're a very pass-happy league. So having a good secondary is a very good thing to have. So if their offensive line can perform, I think I can agree with you. I can come around on that.
That was my thing. And for some reason, I just felt like, man, it's not going to be that bad. And the Giants always, when they're good, it's like when you don't expect them to be good. Like, you know, in the world, they're going to be good. And they just show up and they're good. And to me, the next great running back, dominant running back, is Saquon in this type of era. And the reason why he's going to be able to stay healthy is because he can catch the ball in the backfield. You can play a receiver, and you can really utilize him almost like a slot receiver. You know, you could do what we're doing with some of these other running backs, where he can get out there, you can just get the ball to him in many different ways. So that I'm there. I'm on wax. I can't back off of it. So I'm, you know, I either take a beating all year or whatever. That's why we do this. So we'll keep it moving on that one. Thank y'all for being gentle, because I know I'm gonna get killed later. So I'll do it. Y'all let me get this one. I know I'm gonna take a chance with it. All right. So we got this. We kind of laid out this. You guys, you know, I kind of laid this out to y'all. Y'all did a really good job getting ready. I appreciate y'all for rolling with me on this, on doing this, brother. Now, so now we're getting down to the final standings and playoff teams. And the reason why I'm framing it this way is because a lot of times when people do stuff like that, like, who do you think going to be the division winner? Contextually, you can say, oh, that team's going to win the division. But if it's a strong division, you also want to know, yeah, a team might not win the division, but these other teams, I think, are going to be wild cards. This division is going to be strong enough that they might have one or two other teams fight for that wild card. And to help to contextualize that division a little bit better around strength. So that's kind of what we're going to do right now, and kind of get what we think are going to be our final standings and who we think are going to be making runs for the division. So I'm going to start with Darnell and then come back to Hank and I'll close out.
All right, so my standings are going to be Dallas 1. I'm going to have Philadelphia 2. I'm going to have the Washington Redskins at 3. And I'm going to have the New York Football Giants in last place. That is my order. But as far as the playoff teams go, I'd have to look at who else is in the NFC and who else is going to make some noise. But I believe the two teams that made the playoffs last year have a very good chance. The Cowboys and the Eagles, they're going to be my two playoff teams for the NFC East.
All right, go on, Hank.
All right, so just based upon scheduling alone, I have to go with Dallas Cowboys to win the division. They've got, to me, a softer strength of schedule than does Philly. Philly has got a beast of a schedule. But that being said, I do expect them to make the playoffs. And the reason why is because I think they're going to have a superior conference schedule. I think that the fact that they play a lot of these tough teams very, very straight up and can beat them in their place, I think they're going to be enough. They're going to be a formidable team and make it to the playoffs. And I think they're going to have the first playoff spot, wild card spot. I got to push. I'm trying to work with you here, D. I'm going to pick the Giants third in that division, and I can only give them 6 wins, which I can't call it that an improvement, because that's what they're projected, so it's a push. And then I've got the Washington Redskins falling off at 5-11, and they're starting off, you know, looking at this again. I'm looking at the schedule. They start off playing Philly, then they start off playing Dallas, and they start off playing the Bears. Okay, before they get to the Giants, and they got New England again. That's just going to be a lot for that team, in my opinion, to try to overcome. And that's your Redskins schedule. You talked about Philly. And I think they're going to have a hard time, and I think that by the time they get to San Fran, by week 7, they're going to be calling for Dwayne Haskins. And then we just see what happens at that point. But I've got Dallas first, Philly second, both of those being playoff teams, the Giants, and then rounding it out with the Skins.
That's it. I think we're all in management. This is crazy. I got the Cowboys winning it. I got Philly second. I got the Giants third, the Washington fourth. But one of the things I'm looking at this division, I'm beginning to think about this. I start seeing the trends and going the other way. I think these teams might have a little better records because I think they might do a little bit better in their non-conference matchups than people think. Because think about this, the flip side. The Patriots got to play against the Cowboys, Phillies, and the Giants defense is going to be much improved, but that Washington defense is going to be physical. So think of on the other side of our, as y'all were talking, I'm thinking about they're playing against the AFC East. And I'm not going to break them down because we'll probably break them down later. But that also means those teams got to play against all these other teams. And so the Patriots got to play the Cowboys, who are going to have a good defense and get after you. Philly's going to have a much improved defense, get after you. I think that Washington defense is going to get after folks too. I think that's going to be their stronghold. A lot of questions is how they get that offense. Because Gruden, they talk about Gruden, but I just don't see it sometimes, right? Something falls off, and I don't know quite what it is. The quarterback will put up numbers, but they keep losing. And I don't quite know why they're doing it offensively, right? But it's the kind of game when you play against them, you might beat them, but you're going to walk away hurt. Like, all these teams are going to be physical. And so it's going to be interesting because I think they might win a few more non-conference or, games than anticipated, which might add to their overall record. Where they might be beating up each other, they might be up on people outside of their division. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. With Philly and the Cowboys making that run, you know, I think being in that playoff hunt, you know, where, you know, Philly's probably going to be that first tier of wild card team.
I agree with you there. I think they're going to take the first wild card spot, get the home game, and then again, the one thing about Philly that I've seen. And they're not a team that I particularly like as far as like the Philadelphia Eagles, but you cannot deny, you know, that team gets stronger during the season and then they are a beast in the playoffs.
Yeah. And we've seen teams go from that wild card spot and make a championship run, right? So
right.
They might have
right.
to hiccup, right the ship late, lose maybe divisionally, make the wild card, and then go on a run, right? And I think they're capable of doing that because I think part of it is getting some of their chemistry and continuity and stuff all together as a team in a way. And that could be flipped. It could be the Cowboys doing that either way with it. But I can see them, you know, being that road warrior in a sense.
Right.
So, hey, guys, y'all were good about this. Next week we're going to do two divisions. And we'll probably go with the NFC South. Y'all want to stay with the NFC for a bit and clean that up, or we can go to an AFC side. How y'all
you
want
can
to
roll, roll, you roll, but you roll, we go.
All right,
you
we're going to go to the NFC South.
No,
now that we warmed up, we're going to go up to the NFC South, and then we're going to go with the NFC West.
That's
got some interesting conversations. My goodness, that's a in both those divisions, and we might end up picking up all the time, but, it's gonna be some jokes and everything else in that one. So I'm looking forward to the homework. You listeners, y'all come back for our next podcast with RSG1 Mike when we are going at the NFC South and the NFC West. It's gonna be some good stuff, but you know how we gotta end the show. We got to go to our man, Hank, to drop the mic.
Thank you, D. Listen, we're going to stay with the football theme, kind of, sort of. I just want to kind of ask everybody a question. We started the show off, we talked about the tragic death of the young fighter this past week in the ring. With the NFL spending so much time on trying to change the safety of the helmets and of the equipment and some of the rules, and the CTE or the concussion issues that they've had in the NFL that, you know, have been concerning about players once they get off the field. And then just the overall where is football going on? What is the state of football with the youth? What is the state of football, you know, outside of college? And so I asked and I posed this question because I thought about that as we was preparing for our show today. What if there was no football? What if the football that we know of today that we love so much that we do countdowns on just went away? What if the fear of this game went away because folks sitting around afraid of being hurt, afraid of life after the game, takes the game away, a game where we call our players the Neo Gladiators. That is, baseball is the American pastime. Football is our American's passion. And what if that just went away because of fear? And I say that because there's no way that when we get in between the lines, when we get in the ring, that we get on the court, that we ever expect that our opponent does not walk away as we walk away. But we also understand that as we go and we do this, that this is something that is a part of us. And if it wasn't for it, if we couldn't prepare for it, if we could not look at it, that it takes as much away from us that we might as well have died on that floor, on that court with that young man. He died doing what he loved to do. And as much as we want to protect it sometimes, it is there for us and it's part of us. So I think about that sometimes. And you think about that if it went away, would you be any more alive? Take that with you. We'll talk to you later. Peace.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my peoples in the streets.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic,